I'm going to need to kick off the episode by giving a general definition of the Billy Graham rule.
When we talk about the Billy Graham rule, I mean, I just don't like that description at all. Yeah. Because it's such a shortcoming of who he is and what he did. I think we ought to be looking at how we develop people's character and live with integrity if we're trying to be like Billy Graham.
I've been operating under this principle for 40 years. And the principle for me is simple. Two things. No meals alone, no riding in cars alone, period. The biggest dangers is thinking it could never happen to you. It could happen to anybody.
The rule has been explained to me by a few men that it's a protection for me because men look at me with lust and I can't sit across the table from a man and have a serious conversation about ministry because he only has one thought on his mind.
You've been told that?
I've been told that.
And that this rule is more the problem than the solution. I wonder, how many affairs has it caused? How many ways has it served as a false protection blanket so that all of those things that you actually said people should be thinking about is checking their thoughts and honoring? We wouldn't have to call it Billy Graham, and we wouldn't have to call it a rule if it actually had its worth in its practice.
When Chip's talking, he's talking about people with no intentions of cheating who have blind spots. I guess my big question is, will we ever know how effective or ineffective this rule is? Because we'll never know how many affairs or inappropriate relationships, we'll never know how many it prevented.
Yeah.
I mean, this could be like an unbelievably effective rule.
As soon as you sense your thoughts going somewhere, it could just be some kind of fantasy, dream, aspiration, or relationally, or whatever. But as soon as you allow yourself to clear your current, sorry about the dog.
Just because I don't believe or agree doesn't mean I can't learn from you.
Why did you have to bring that up?
Okay, that one I'm super embarrassed about.
Do you like me?
Do I like you?
Yeah.
As an individual or as a podcast?
Yeah, as a person.
No, I like you.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Cool.
And I don't have any interest in appearing to be stronger than I am.
I ain't bowed to Nebuchadnezzar's statue. He gonna lead. You feel me?
How do we love people who see the world differently than we do?
What would it look like if we truly loved all of our neighbors? Could listening to their stories be the first step? This is Seacoast Church, and there's way more to talk about.
Welcome to the Seacoast Podcast, and I don't say this all the time, but this is one of the more excited that I've ever been for an episode because I think there's going to be some fireworks. So for our listeners' sake, I sent out an email to staff. I think Roy reached out to me, or you reached out to me. Roy is the campus pastor at Somerville. I don't know if he recommended you.
I reached out to you, and I was like, I feel strongly about this.
Yes.
But then a week later, he said, I think you should really do this. And that surprised me. It was very gracious of him to give his blessing because we don't agree.
Okay, gotcha.
So he reached out to you also.
Right. So yeah. Roy is a proponent of Billy Graham rule, and you guys have had discussions already, I would imagine.
Yeah, we have had.
And you're
I'm not against the rule.
Right. But you're not that passionate about any of this stuff, right?
Not at all.
And then B. Ray, how long have you been here at Seacoast?
About 5 years. So
5 years. What's the connection between you and Jenna Surratt that had her reach out to me and say, I've got the person for you? Like, how did she know that about you?
Well, I guess I'm not sure specifically. I do lead the Titus II Women's Mentoring Program. So I've been working with her on that for a number of years. And I lead a husband's prayer call. So every Wednesday, we get on a phone call. Some wives pray for our husbands. So those are my main roles within sisterhood. I've done different things. So we've just known each other for a long time,
right,
which means I get to be blessed by her just amazing leadership.
Yeah.
So she reached out. What was interesting to me wasn't so much Jenna giving you my name, was that a friend encouraged me to have a word this year. And I was like, oh, gee. And God just kept telling me, voice, voice, voice. And I said, oh, no, I'm not putting that out there when she's asking me for it on January 1st. So I said, give me the 21 days.
Uh-huh.
And loud and clear, God said, had a voice. So the fact that I got invited here is insane.
Yeah. Chip, I think this is interesting. So I sent both of these ladies kind of a snapshot of some of the areas that we'll get into. Bea got back with me and basically said, I just wanted to let you know that I don't know if you use the word offended, but you already don't like how the question sounds slanted pro Billy Graham rule against your perspective. And I was like, well, that's why you're coming in. But you were thinking that I may would say, you know what? Why don't you hold off?
Correct. I use the word oppose. Those are things that I oppose.
Yeah. And you just ironically talked to Billy Graham's grandson.
Well, it didn't seem right to come on the podcast. So I did reach out to Stefan Chidjian, who I've met on a couple of occasions. And I was shocked that he immediately signed up for, you know, a phone call with me. I have a little Calendly thing. And we did. We had a lovely 30-minute conversation about his feelings. And that was really important for me. Not to speak on behalf of him, because I'm the one that was invited, but that is why, to me, I would never include his name in such an action, and I wouldn't include the word rule. So gotcha. There are certain practices, but I wouldn't include either of those.
Gotcha. So he doesn't take too kindly to Grandpappy's name being used for this daggum thing. Huh?
He certainly doesn't follow it.
Yeah.
He's absolutely had a lot of stories about how it has held women back and how he has a business partner who is a woman. He and I are connected to a company called Convene, which is about CEO forum groups. And that was the one experience I had is my amazing mentor is in Pennsylvania. And this man, he's just a better person than I'll ever be, but I love being in his presence. And he introduced me to someone, believe it or not, who goes to Seacoast. We would go to a big church. And the first interaction I had with this gentleman was he said, I honor my wife by not meeting with women. So let's have a Zoom call. And it didn't feel right to me. We ended up having a phone call. And my job with this person was to help him be a speaker in this organization. And he's a great speaker. He's super smart. But how it ended up playing out was my CFO said, there's no way he can come to our groups because he cannot say that in front of a group of CEOs, business owners, some of whom are women and some are men, and treat them differently. And so this was this awkward position where I'm supposed to help this gentleman do this goal. And it took me 2 years till I finally pulled him. He, you know, talked to me and I said, well, remember that first conversation? My body parts were way more important than my brain. They were the first thing you thought about. And it certainly didn't honor me or your wife. And the poor gentleman had been living by this. He was surrounded by people who thought that that was so valuable and never had thought about how many affairs it caused versus how many it saved and all those things. And the poor guy, I mean, the real life tears.
Yeah.
Because he hadn't realized that this thing that sometimes we get in an echo chamber and it sounds good, but in actuality, it is so devastating and so harmful and so belittling. Anyway, and so now I hope he can be a speaker at the organization.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. And I feel like, and now I feel like a little scared. I'm going to call it Billy Graham rule, but now I feel bad for calling it that, but we'll stick with it. The Billy Graham rule here, in this conversation, I always get stuck. And I realized there are not too many issues where I don't land somewhere. And I'm not talking about landing authoritatively, like I know that I know that I know. There's not too many places where I don't land somewhere. And I think this is one of them. Mm-hmm. I don't know, because when I hear Chip talk today, I'll be like, yeah, that makes a whole lot of sense. I mean, that there's so much risk and blah, blah, blah. And then I'll listen to you guys and I'll be like that. So I guess if I had to lean in a direction, it would be anti-Billy Graham rule, but I certainly don't land there. And especially, Chip, when we've seen some just shake up here at Seacoast, for instance, where, you know, some of the background story seems like Billy Graham rule could have prevented. This is what I want to do first, is before we get into the meat of the Billy Graham rule, I want to have kind of some preliminary conversation, not only to bring the listenership on to this kind of like an almost like an investigative conversation, but also to get y'all's perspective on these. Are going to be really simple questions. We don't really have to get deep into them, but let's get super real, real quick. Would we all agree that regardless of who you're married to, you will very likely be attracted to other people? Is there anybody who does not agree with that?
What I laugh about is when people say things like that to me, I'm like, you haven't seen my husband. He's very good looking. And by the way, he would beat you up. Yeah, so both of those things are true. That said, he's not the only good-looking man on the planet. And I know we spend a lot of time with women who are far more attractive than me. So yeah. I hear your point, and I am lucky to be married to Mr. Good-looking.
I'm not making a point.
Sorry. That's tricky. I am not attracted to anyone but my husband, and I'm attracted to him because he's a safe place for me. We were laughing last night. He was like, I was like, I would never remarry, you know, because we were talking through some of these questions and he was like, oh, I've ruined marriage for you or something. And I was like, no, like you're safe and that's what's attractive. So no.
All right. Well, I would be the first one to say just as a general rule of thumb, we are attracted to other people. That's just my opinion.
I agree with that.
Joey, I think it's probably not the best way to word it. Do you have thoughts that your spouse would not appreciate toward another person? Because it's not the same thing.
Yeah, but I'm not trying to come up with something that's bad. I'm saying just a general rule of thumb.
Yeah.
Are we attracted to other people? I think that's just a safe yes. I mean, there's tons of people in this world, and some of them we're going to be attracted to, right?
Yeah, but if you ask me the question the way you asked it, are you attracted to other people? My answer would be no.
Okay.
Do I notice other women and think thoughts that I have to put in their proper place? Yes. But I don't consider those the same thing. I don't want a relationship with that person. I don't even want a fling. But it crosses lines that my wife would not appreciate. I understand the question, but I'm nitpicking for a reason.
Gotcha.
So my answer to am I attracted would be no.
Are there other people that you're sexually attracted to? And we're talking at a purely physiological level, and we're not talking if the Holy Spirit's alive and awake in your life right this second. Are we sexually attracted to other people in this world? Is that another, is that a yes? Everybody's looking at Chip.
I mean, I probably want to nitpick a little bit.
Please do.
But probably for now, I'd say yes.
And that's just biology. Yeah. I mean, that's not a criticism to anybody. And I'm not saying, oh, so just let things loose and be free with your biology. I'm just saying, biologically, we're just going to be attracted to other people sexually. Would you agree with that, B?
If I give you a little TMI, I go to a pretty intense workout class. There's a lot of super handsome young men sometimes, not a lot, it's more women. I teach at a university and get a lot of positive feedback. What I believe is true, I hope it's true, maybe I'm trying to make it true, is it translates to me, oh my gosh, my nearly 60-year-old husband is looking like that 30-year-old, you know? And so I don't know if it's bad, but I certainly am noticing that there's a connection there.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's
well, and good, one of bad, your questions different. Was asking about like just the differences between men and women. And so I'm landing on a no here. Mm-hmm. I'm not, but I'm also willing to admit that.
Landing on a no with the sexually attracted question?
Yeah. No, I'm not.
Right.
But I'm also willing to admit that that might not be typical.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
No, that makes sense. We'll ask one more preliminary question when it comes to attraction, and then we're going to move into the differences between male and female and the extent of them. But for some people, are affairs a normal progression of our fleshly and carnal desires? ? So I didn't mention submitted to the Holy Spirit or anything. Let's change the word from normal to natural. Is it a natural progression of our fleshly and carnal desires? Is it?
Well, I'm very blessed. I've never had an affair or been any part of one. But my thought is yes.
Yeah.
I think looking at the news in the world today would tell you yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chip, let's get some nitpick.
I mean, I from what you said a minute ago, it sounds like we're going to go there, because it's probably a key to this whole conversation. But I would say acknowledging differences between men and women, the answer is yes, but much more so in men than women. You know, and again, I don't want to get really unnecessarily controversial, but, you know, if you've moved beyond a 6-day creation, meaning you've accepted some form of God-guided long-time evolution, then in our animal form, men are sperm donors. And to perpetuate the species, you want to spread the sperm as widely as you can. So I just think there's an argument to be made that a man has to fight a desire to propagate the species in different ways than a woman does. A man's goal in propagating the species is having sex with as many partners as possible. A woman's is to become pregnant and then protect that pregnancy. There's just a natural difference in what we each have to fight against.
And you'd say there's an exception to all of that, but there is a norm that we can look at with some scientific lenses. Like there's a norm that we can point to. I would agree with you. Would is that safe to say?
I'm not sure what you mean by that, Joey, the exception part.
There's some females who would be more like what you just described out of males, and there's some males who would not fit in that category that you just described. I'm saying there's exceptions to what you just said, but there's a norm. There's a norm that we can point to. That's not a popular thing amongst a lot of people, but I would agree. I think there is somewhat of a norm that we can say, well, you know, I hate to say it, but just look around you. Let me read some stats real quick. And this
Let me say something about what you just said. The reasons would be different for men and women.
Okay.
For women, it'd be more psychological. For women, it'd be more, men, it'd be more physiological. Gotcha. Not that it's not psychological, but it'd be more physiological.
Gotcha. Do you think there are differences in general, as a rule of thumb, between male and female with how they are driven to attraction, how they see attraction, visually stimulated, emotionally stimulated?
Yeah, are there basic rules of thumb?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How about you, B?
I definitely think there are differences. And I think what Chip described is one perfect example. I also think when we look at the Bible, you know, whoever had however many wives versus a woman is not having however many husbands, except for in a context of shame. And I think there's something else about the culture where there's a little bit of celebration for a man who can have multiple partners, and there's tremendous shame if that were the case with a woman. So I think it's physiological, or, you know, our human makeup, as Chip described. I think it's could be misread in the Bible as endorsed. But even, I guess, John 8, when we talk about the woman, the adulterous woman, like, where's the man? She was caught in the act. And so that, to me, was a foreshadowing of how our culture is going to say, let's look at these things differently. And that exacerbates or expands the problem.
Yep. All right. Well, let's move into the specifics of what has been termed the Billy Graham rule. Whatever support I would lend to this guideline, I see it as a protection for men and women. I don't see this as for men. I also understand the gravity of how it affects women more negatively than it does men, but I definitely see this as protective measures for both genders, not just a man thing, because I think we've all seen women pursue married men. We've seen men pursue married women. We've seen affairs happen that were never intended, but I'm going to give you the floor in your head. Maybe think 2 to 3 minutes, yes or no to the Billy Graham rule and why. And we'll start with Chip.
I mean, I'm strongly for it. There's two ways good people get in trouble. There's thousands of ways bad people get in trouble. And forgive me for good and bad. It's just for brevity's sake. I don't mean I'm evaluating their character necessarily, although it could be. But the two ways good people, in other words, people that are trying to do the right thing, the bottom line is that person's brain's going to say, how in the world did I get here? And their world's going to come crashing in. And two ways you get there. One is an unrestricted fantasy life. What does that mean? The battle in the whole area we're talking about is not between your legs. It's between your ears. If you don't win the battle between your ears, you're going to lose it somewhere else. So number one is an unrestricted fantasy life. What does that mean? That means that as soon as you sense your thoughts going somewhere, whether it's toward a specific person or not, it could just be some kind of, you know, fantasy, dream, aspiration, sexually or relationally or whatever. As soon as you allow yourself to compare your current reality to some other reality, you're already edging toward trouble. So number one, unrestricted fantasy life. So the second way good people get in trouble, and the reason I'm a strong proponent of the Billy Graham rule, is you begin to build a friendship, you begin to build rapport, and then there's a conversation that goes across a line where there's an emotional connection, a sense of support, a sense of empathy, a sense of celebration, a sense of, wow, he gets me, she gets me. And if not caught and checked, it drifts further down that road. And you know you're in trouble when you stop sharing all these conversations with your spouse or friends or whatever, and maybe even start hiding how much time you're spending or texting. Eventually, what starts as a friendship evolves into something beyond that and very easily translates into, even if it doesn't become physical, the majority of the time it's going to, it becomes something that violates the trust of a marriage. And it's the way we're made. You know, when we have bonding moments with a person, we have oxytocin in our brain. It's just being aware of and sensitive to the way we get in trouble and then developing strategies to prevent it.
But you for sure see how tricky and complicated this situation is, this discussion.
Oh, all the time.
Yeah.
All the time.
Let's get into that tricky area, because everything Chip said, I agree with, and I will probably agree with like everything you guys say. That's why I really feel like I'm in a dilemma, because I don't see how we can argue. And here's one thing I want to point out, what Chip said. I didn't hear much, and this isn't to you guys. This is just a statement in general. I didn't hear hardly anything about body parts, lust, pornography. I did hear unrestricted fantasy life, but that could maybe not be sexual. That could be imagining a life with another person. I'm hearing more emotional connection. That's why I think more in the territory of this is a protective measure for women and men, not just men. But what do you think, Charlotte?
I don't disagree with the Billy Graham rule. I feel like the box we put it in is restrictive and problematic. So when we look at the manifesto, which was a group of men coming together to link arms and say, we're going to do this life together, it included other things. It included honoring the local church, living a life of integrity, being honest, not exaggerating. It included financial integrity. And so I think that we sort of set a limit on it when we call it a rule and we stick to man and female, like male and female relationships with it. And so I feel like that's kind of where it's problematic is, for Billy Graham, it seems like the intent was to bring along people in his life who would hold him to a standard of accountability in a lot of areas and not just one area. And so I feel like the description even is problematic. And, you know, I've just been talked to in a way that's been damaging.
Would you be able to give us an example? Because that's super important.
Well, and it's a little bit of a contrast of what Chip said. I mean, the rule has been explained to me by a few men that it's a protection for me because, you know, men look at me with lust and I can't sit across a table from a man and have a serious conversation about ministry because he only has one thought on his mind.
You've been told that?
I've been told that.
Wow.
And
pastors have one thought on their mind.
By a few people. So that, wow. I mean, that's problematic.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to.
As much as it might be true.
Right. I don't want to shy away from how quickly people can get there if they're not conscious of their thoughts. But for someone to say that's the only thing they can think about.
That's the reason for the rule. Like, you need counseling, dude. Like, but so I feel like it's kind of problematic in the way we talk about the rule. And then the other question that I have about the rule is I've seen many churches where the rule has been put on a pedestal and then people have failed their wedding vows. And I'm like, something's amiss. Like, what? Why is this rule in place and put on a pedestal, and yet people are failing their marriage vows? Maybe we need to have a different kind of conversation about the manifesto.
Yeah, I see all of that. The only pushback that I would give is I think divorce could happen for just so many different reasons. I don't know if it'd be tied. It could be tied to that, but yeah, that's a. What do you think, B?
Too many things.
I know. this could be a podcast series for sure.
I think the main thing I think is thank God Paul didn't follow this. Thank God he looked to women to build the church. Greg Surratt gave one of the best talks I've ever heard in a recent sisterhood. And he just went through 10 or more women in the Bible that were part of forming the church and partnering with Paul. And so my main thought is, praise God that this is a recent creation. I have a brother who is extremely successful in financial services. And that's a place where there's been particularly great problems with men and women behind closed doors. And his wife had the wisdom to say, I don't want you alone in a car with a woman. She was never that she didn't trust my brother. It was more she was afraid that he would be accused of something that he didn't do. What he had the wisdom to do as a very young person is say, no problem, but I'll never be alone with a man. He knew immediately that he wanted to grow his teams. He wanted to grow his organizations. He wanted to mentor people. And he knew right off of the bat that this was not going to be something he hid behind as another way of holding back women. Two things I would say to that is one, by all means, if you are filling hundreds of thousands of people in a stadium, and therefore you are a target at that point, maybe think about it. Until then, check your ego a little bit. And then the second thing is be mindful. The very first thing is if it's even something you consider, obviously you wouldn't meet alone with men. The third thing is I teach at Charleston Southern University, which I just treasure. It's such a blessing. In the process of teaching there and then since, I've several times had meetings that were scheduled with men. And what was so cool, and I have no idea if it's some kind of rule, no one's ever, you know, asked me to sign some paper that's some rule. But what would happen is the day before the meeting, someone would say, you know, Charlotte is really great at marketing. She's going to join us. Or Ralph really has some insight. So there was never this absurd, let me first identify you as your body parts and pretend that I honor my wife and make this statement. Maybe it was a practice, but it was done in such a classy way that actually was cool to have Charlotte there for the marketing thing or Ralph there. That I think is keep it to yourself. I would never call it a rule. I would not take our greatest evangelist name and attach it to it. But if that is something in your own heart, then that is a whole different program. I actually 100% agree with everything that Chip has said. And yet to me, it's on some spectrum and this rule is more the problem than the solution. I wonder how many affairs has it caused? How many ways has it allowed someone to dive into the pornography or to dive in that? Because they say, well, I have this rule. How many ways has it served as a false protection blanket so that all of those things that you actually said people should be thinking about is checking their thoughts and honoring? You know, I work with a male colleague, and one of my first thoughts was, I'm getting he and his wife in a small group with me and my husband. Like, those are the kinds of things that you should maybe, or I hate the word should. I'm sorry I said that. But that I try to do without having some false safety blanket that in my mind actually has led to more problems.
So you aren't minimizing what maybe Chip and I would call risks when it comes to attraction and other people and all of that. You just don't want it all being reduced to one rule.
I'm accusing you of minimizing those risks.
Yeah,
I am. I am accusing you of not taking them seriously enough that some false, silly rule attributed to someone who should be talked about in some other ways is not helping. So mm-hmm. I wouldn't have thought of that word, but in a sense, I'm accusing you of belittling the rule. Yeah. Those risks.
Chip, you have anything before we continue?
I mean, it does seem like there's a bit of a hang up on the word rule, which my wife would laugh when I teasingly say I'm a rule follower because I'm not. So I'm not a big person on rules either. I don't care if you call it a guideline, but like in our organization, it's a guideline with barbed wire. But I also think there's a little bit of fuzziness in some of what you said, B. Like, Paul obviously didn't follow this. I don't think there's any reason to say that. He had women involved in ministry positions, leadership, et cetera. That doesn't mean he rode in a car alone with them. That doesn't mean that he met with them alone.
He didn't ride on a camel with one of them by themselves.
That's right.
A camel.
Yeah. That's right.
He didn't ride on a camel by himself.
They went to the well together.
That's right. Paul probably would have followed Jesus' example, and he met with a group of disciples. I don't know that I can think of a single time Jesus met with a disciple alone.
Well, what about the woman at the well?
Well, it wasn't spontaneous.
It was the middle of the day. No one was around.
Right.
And there Jesus is alone with a woman. And what happened next? She went and evangelized an entire town. She converted an entire town. And they both lived above reproach.
How does that affect our conversation?
That's a really good question. Yeah. Jesus shows us it's possible to be in the presence of a woman alone and honor her and right. and put her on give her a purpose and mission without violating her.
See, that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
There's nothing in our guideline that has anything to do with what you just said. What we're saying is Jesus didn't set up weekly appointments with her alone to develop her.
Okay. So I have a question.
That's all I'm saying is, are we saying that women should be held down or whatever? Y'all are reading that into this. I don't even know where that's coming from.
I mean, part of the problem is the way I've been talked to about the role. Another problem I think I experience is, you know, here at the Mount Pleasant campus, you have this beautiful cafe where, Joey, you can meet with anyone, male or female, and it'd be observed and open and interruptible. And I don't have a place like that except for the local coffee shop, which is observable and open. But because of this rule, I can't go meet with men that I lead to have meaningful conversations about ministry once a quarter, once a year, once when I'm bringing them onto the team to discern what their gifting is and who they ought to serve with and what area they ought to serve in. I can't do that. Like, I have to be very creative in how I do that. No, that's how it's limited to me.
Yeah, but it's not. You have to do exactly what B said that her organization did, mm-hmm. and that is they very wisely said, well, why doesn't so-and-so meet with you? All you have to do is have a third person, male or female.
Would you find it more problematic that you can't meet to people who are serving under your leadership? Or is it more problematic that you can't have the interactions with your leadership that other males can have with him?
I don't know. Like, I think that honestly, because of some hard conversations, we've come to a place of agreeing to disagree about things, but also like living according to the guidelines, you know, that you described, Chip, to honor our spouses, to be having conversations in open places. But I mean, it's also a requirement for me to meet with my supervisor once a month, once a week. And that doesn't necessarily happen with other people in the room. And those are conversations that are developing me as a leader. So I think technically that's breaking the Billy Graham rule, right? To have a one-on-one conversation once a week, once a month with my supervisor. But it's an expectation. It's tricky.
I believe if people really think that they would realize we wouldn't have to call it Billy Graham and we wouldn't have to call it a rule if it actually had its worth in its practice. And so by the fact that we have to reach in these ways, I truly believe deep down people understand that I don't think anyone sets out to harm, but it would be hard for me to recognize someone not seeing the harm to so many people, certainly to women, because if you're willing to treat your subordinates different, there's not any more conversation that needs to happen there. But I think it very much hurts ministers, anyone in leadership because of this false thing. And you know, you mentioned, you know, even our church isn't immune to it. We do all these silly things, in my opinion. I was asked one time, different place, different time, to volunteer with kids. And I was to sign a piece of paper that
said— This is here, right? You're in a safe place. You're in a safe place, B.
It said, you're not in an extramarital sexual affair. And I didn't volunteer because I thought, it doesn't tell me that I don't get slow to anger or that I'm not judging people.
Wow,
or,
that's a good point,
B. And I thought, what?
There's so many sins to list.
So I wasn't. I did not date for more than 10 years. So that it didn't apply. I wasn't worried that I would sign something different. What I have learned is apparently all sorts of people sign that because it's a great beard to, you know, hide behind. What crushed me was the fall that really happened as a result. It's like we had some fake piece of paper, but there was no, what did you just say? We should be focusing on people's character, not these like false, curtain,
right.
So to
speak. I mean, what we see Billy Graham do is gather men who are on a similar mission and go, we're going to do this together. And how many people who have failed their wedding vows have been isolated and not in a community of people who are holding them to a standard of character and integrity? I have three teenage boys, one's preteen, two in high school. And I think about the implications of this for them and how I mother them and what I how I talk to them. And I don't ever want them to get this message that because you're a boy, you have this, what did you call it, Chip? You called it a fantasy thought life that is out of control. Like, I don't want them to ever have that message. While that might be true in some sense, I want to describe and call out, edify the character that I want to see in them, that they would treat the girls that they go to school with that are in our family small group together, that they would treat them with honor and respect, and that they would love them like they love their sister is the kind of expectation that I have for them. And also, like, creating a safe place of, I mean, when they have a crush, like, let's talk about that. And they have, and we've had good conversations about those things, but I would never want the standard to be like, you're a boy, you're going to behave like a boy, which I feel like is the message I heard growing up. I don't know if that's predominant today, but it's definitely not the message I want them to hear from me.
When I think about Seacoast Church specifically, I don't get the sense, and I get your kind of like rah rah men. This is what we're coming together to do, and we're not gonna, you know, lust in our eyes and keep the women away and all that. I don't get that feel at Seacoast at all. I don't know if it's ever mentioned publicly, but I know behind the scenes we're like, oh my gosh, we need to do something, and I feel like it's almost like a behind the scenes, hey, what? How do we help people from falling into this? It feels as if when Chip and I are talking, well, I'll throw myself out of it because I really do feel pretty neutral. When Chip's talking, he's talking about people with no intentions of cheating, who have blind spots, who, and then when it sounds like when you guys are talking, it's more of the rah, rah, let's make a big ordeal out of this, or the people who are getting into trouble regardless. And here's my big question is, will we ever know how effective or ineffective this rule is? Because we'll never know how many affairs or inappropriate relationships or emotional affairs, we'll never know how many it prevented.
Yeah.
I mean, this could be like an unbelievably effective rule. We just see when it doesn't work, sort of thing. And then the other thing that I really wish that we would be able to do this, and I could probably do a little research and find some people. I would love to hear someone who did not really agree with this guideline, and it bit them bad and tore their life apart because of a bad mistake. That would be an interesting dialogue. But you guys camp out more on how this is, and maybe unfair isn't the best word, but how is this unfair to women in the workplace in general, and then in ministry specifically also?
I don't mean to camp out there.
Asked us that question. You asked us how it does.
Yeah.
So I don't live there.
Yeah.
But some of that response is based on an erroneous interpretation of what we're saying. Basically, number one, it sounds like we're all hung up because we call it the Billy Graham rule. I had never even heard of the Billy Graham rule until Joey mentioned it to me about a year ago. I've been operating under this principle for 40 years, but I'd never heard of the Billy Graham rule. So I have no invested interest in the Billy Graham rule as a label. And the principle for me is simple. Two things. Two. No meals alone. No riding in cars alone. Period. The whole thing about meeting with your direct report in your office, the whole whatever, that's not an issue. That's not my issue. I'm counseling with women alone all the time. The issue for me is contexts that by their very nature carry a different message. A meal speaks of something beyond business. Riding in a car alone is just a whole different thing. You know, B, you mentioned earlier about the spectrum, and there's just this narrow spectrum. Here's the problem. Nobody's come up with a crystal ball to tell where somebody is on the spectrum. So we've had staff members get in trouble that I would have bet a year's salary that could never happen to them. That's one of the biggest dangers. Is thinking it could never happen to you. it could happen to anybody. And if you don't think so, then you're already an inch in trouble.
Yeah. And I think that would be B and Charlotte's point is the rule was in place and it still happened.
Yeah. One of the men.
Yeah. And let's forget the thing rule.
Yeah.
Just throw out the word rule.
Well,
I mean, gosh.
Well, it was a guideline that Seacoast has in place then.
I think we need clarity. It sounds like, because I agree with everything you're saying, Chip. I don't want to ride in a car alone with someone, my best friend maybe, who's not a man. I'm not asking for that, but I do feel limited by the standard because I think we lack clarity about what context is allowed and what isn't.
Yeah.
I think, as is the case with many issues, there's more factors involved than it's possible to even consider in one conversation.
That's true.
Would you all agree with this statement? Men and women communicate differently. Would you agree with that?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. So I think some men are just uncomfortable communicating with women. Why? They don't want to learn how. They're too lazy. So what that causes is, hey, if we got this cool little Billy Graham rule I can hide behind, So again, some of it's not.
That's pretty messed
let's,
up.
Again, throw out Billy Graham rule. Let's quit calling it that. It's a principle and it has to do with context. When you go on a date, you ride together in a car, you go eat a meal together. Just don't do anything that has the flavor of a uniqueness to this relationship.
I feel like the most important people that are affected are people we haven't even spoken about yet. And to me, those are the people that are looking to the church. And so, Chip, I'm super encouraged by you saying alone in a car ride and a meal. At least 25 times I have been told, can't have a cup of coffee with you. It may be because someone is afraid to communicate, but I think it is this, quite frankly, egotistical, pretending I'm honoring my wife, because it always comes with a sentence of, I'm honoring my wife. I'm like, I bet.
Is this here at Seacoast? I keep asking her here at Seacoast.
Probably.
Sorry. And so maybe when I have had the guts to share that, sadly, so I try to hide it because I don't want any more people running away from the church and thinking of the church as ill-educated or worse. Yeah. And there's just no better way to be like, oh, those are those crazy people. And so to me, you know, if we really are that sort of carnal where we can't have a cup of coffee in the Seacoast open atrium area, no wonder someone thinks I wouldn't want to be a part of that club.
Yeah. So you have been told not only that you can't have a cup of coffee, but here's the reason why, because I need to honor my wife.
Yes. And then this is, so I'm not here to whine, like I don't have enough, you know, connections, anything. So this actually, God gave me this scene, and I didn't intend to talk about this today, but I probably know three really fancy people in the world. That's it. Like, I am not fancy, but I actually had a meeting. This guy was willing to meet me, even though it was against his rules. I don't remember if he called it something or whatever, but okay, I'll meet you only in the Seacoast thing. And I'm sure he's a perfectly nice person. And he was talking about his business and how excited he was and all the people he had met at his men's group, which in and of itself, by the way, I'm not invited to the men's group. But he actually used three different stories to tell me about people. And I know for a fact that the coincidence, because it was God orchestrated. One was an issue he was trying to have with, or happened with Ford Motor Company. One had something to do with Facebook, and one was someone becoming a Fortune 500 CFO. Well, I don't know too many fancy people, like I said, but a very dear friend of mine was the CFO of Facebook. The person that wrote a recommendation on the back of my book is a board member of Ford Motor Company. And I happened to have a friend who was the CFO of Shell. And when she looked for advice, she calls me about parenting things, moving back to the United States. And so I think she could help this person who was about to be a CFO of a slightly smaller company. And I just smiled because he wasn't interested in anything. But, you know, it was so interesting to me. So I'm not here to say, oh, women are all put down. I mean, I wasn't put down by that, but I had something I could offer. But I couldn't be introduced to those people, and I certainly couldn't come to the men's group where they were and offer my assistance that could help them work through their situation.
Mm-hmm. Let me give a—I might be hurting myself here, but let me give a Jordan Peterson observation. Women have been in the workforce, what, how long? What do y'all think?
A couple years, three?
I mean, how long?
I don't know, since the 60s, 70s? No, probably since 40s. World War II was the big kickoff of women in the workforce, I'd assume.
All right, that'd be my guess. Let's say 50
women
to 70.
Have been working since the Garden of Eden, yeah, Chip. Yeah.
I know, but they've been in the workforce.
Okay.
For 50 to 75. This is 50 to 75 years. Let's acknowledge that it's going to take a while to figure out how to make all this work. Let's not make it so simple. There is chemistry that happens between men and women, period. Throw them in a room, there's chemistry that happens. And it just takes some time to figure some of this out. Overreacting in either direction is not helpful. And I do sense a little bit of that, in my opinion, on the call. But as we figure this out, let's remember why we care about it at Seacoast. We care about it because of the four situations we've had to deal with in the last year and the devastation it causes in families and et cetera, et cetera. Again, throw out the rule thing, but we're figuring it out and we'll get there.
Do y'all have any thoughts that y'all want to interject before we wrap this thing up? Any loose ends that you feel you didn't get to touch on? Any three of you?
First of all, it's awesome to be here and I love the chance to share and to learn. I hope it's been clear to your last point, Chip, that I care about those situations too. I care about this. To me, the main person is that hurt. I have just seen that at least one situation, if that rule hadn't existed and silly paperwork hadn't existed, I actually think we would have gotten to the character and some of the things that actually really matter as opposed to the thin veils. And so it is not out of any kind of, like, that's why I told the story about it. It's not about, I need something more, but my heart breaks alongside you. And I'm certainly not minimizing any of that.
Yeah, it's just really challenging to talk about because it is so complex. There are so many people involved who've been hurt. You know, if we could imagine what it would be like for men and women to work together and use the giftings that God has given us as individuals and as male and female and in every way, I think we could serve people better. We could reach the world better if we were embracing our differences and being able to work alongside each other.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to make an observation that I think is noteworthy, and it's a compliment to you two, but I think you guys would both push back a little bit, is it does appear that you guys have very solid relationships with your spouse and a very great, like, safe closeness that not everybody has that. Not everybody is talking from that context. And that doesn't weaken y'all's opinion at all. Mm-hmm. But imagine a woman sitting here who has a jerk of a husband and her direct supervisor or somebody who she oversees is the perfect gentleman that is nice and caring.
Yeah.
And, you know what I'm saying? It'd be a different point of view, or maybe not a different point of view, but definitely a different context that it would be coming from. And well, again, that's and not I knocking love... y'all's arguments at all.
You know, there's just whatever, just different ways to look at it. Like, let's say a guy is being pursued in the appropriate ways. Like, I want to learn from you. But this guy genuinely thinks inappropriate thoughts toward that person whenever he's around her. What is he supposed to do? He can't come right out and say it. So he's going to come up with some weird excuse for why you can't meet, but in certain very protected spaces. So sometimes the effort on the guy's part is admirable. I'm having a problem. I don't want to give it air to breathe. Those are awkward moments. You know, we can dance around it all we want, but that's reality. Let's remember, as far as I'm concerned, there's principles that are just smart in the light of how men and women are made and how, you know, we're attracted and we make babies and all that good stuff. All we're saying is meals alone, riding in cars alone. All we're saying.
So you can be in a hotel room alone, airplanes to Hawaii alone.
Have at it. Beach chairs on the beach.
Just, all right,
just,
so this question
just get
is directed
there in separate
to-
cars.
If you can make it there. All right, so I'm going to ask this question for Chip, and it I think that a lot of my scenarios I come up with are really off the wall and crazy, and we can laugh at. I think this is a very sensible, practical, and it very much so could happen. But I'm going to use myself as an example. So, Chip, I come to you, and the podcast is expanded to 5 different Seacoast podcasts, and we need someone to oversee the operations. And we're pretty much at the end of the hiring process. We have 2 different candidates. One candidate, they're both just top-notch candidates, unbelievable. And one of them just comes out a tiny bit on top. And we're talking very insignificant. Chip, I'd say, man, I could hire both of these, be super happy. One comes out maybe just a little bit on top. I call Jenna Young, who's our HR director. And I was like, Jenna, I think we've decided we're going to hire candidate A, because she comes out just a little bit on top of candidate B. I give you a phone call, Chip, that night, and I was like, Chip, man, you heard that we decided on the candidate A. And you're like, yep, congratulations, man, she's a winner. And I was like, hey, I just want to tell you, I'm not worried about myself doing anything, but, you know, Priscilla and I, we're kind of going through a hard time. We're not communicating as much. Things are really stressed out at the house. And I'm just telling you, who we're hiring is very attractive, but man, there's just something that I just feel a little uncomfortable. There's like a deeper connection there. And I'm just trying to explain to you something that's in my heart that I'm a little bit hesitant about, maybe even a little fearful of. How do you handle that? You know, and you know me really well, so you could probably hear my words and kind of interpret a little bit about my heart. But if I'm communicating any angst at all, how would you handle that, Chip? As someone here on this staff who you've got a sense of responsibility, if you can help us from getting in trouble, you would. Would you put a stop to that hire and say, go with candidate B?
No, what I'd probably do is say, I'm okay with it if you make sure that she and Priscilla spend time together. In other words, get Priscilla connected to her, and that will help protect everybody. And if she has a husband, the 4 of you.
Cool.
You know?
Is that also assuming that you and Priscilla are taking active steps to add health to your marriage? Like, I think that would be
right
part of a healthy response.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Would there be any scenario, any words that I tell you where you would feel like he can't hire her? Like, is there anything that I could tell you in that scenario where you'd say, Joey, I'm gonna call HR and we got to have a conversation because you can't hire her?
Well, you can't hire her would probably depend on something she had done. But if you're having the issues, we'd approach it from your side. In other words, you're the problem.
I love that. I love that.
That's so good.
No, we don't
I love
know.
That. No, that's so great. Good.
I don't know whether she's done anything or not. I wasn't in on the interviews, apparently. I mean, you know, I'm a little bit weird. I'm of the opinion that, like, I don't have a personal assistant at the moment. But if I did, I don't ever have a personal assistant my wife hasn't approved of. My wife gets to say, nope, not that one. And I'm okay with that.
Well, thank you guys. Thank y'all for joining. I'm curious, like, every time I talk to folks, proponents or opponents in this discussion, I always learn something. And I have to say, my position would be, we got to figure something else out. But man, I'm hesitant to just abandon. But yeah, I can abandon the word rule.
I don't want to abandon the principle. I think let's look at the whole manifesto, you know, as a standard. I do think I have some clarity on how to ask questions that are actually going to get the answers I'm looking for better than before I walked in the room.
Yeah. This is like real life stuff. You're like, we're having a conversation on the podcast, but it's like real life that you're like, oh, yeah, now I know what's the question.
I know how to ask the
question.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. And I don't want to put my marriage at jeopardy at all. I'm grateful that we're in a healthy place. Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like I have 3 new friends. I'm super happy about that. And yeah. Chip, I'm even a bigger fan. So
that's right.
Enjoy your family, man.
All right. I got to work. I got my chipper chats this afternoon.
All right. Enjoy the chipper chats.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All
Jeff.
Right. Later.
Later.
You've been listening to the Things You Won't Hear on Sunday Seacoast Podcast. In the show notes, you'll see a link to our Facebook group page. Also, we'd love for you to consider subscribing so you get these episodes downloaded right when they come out. If you enjoy the podcast, we'd love for you to give us some love by rating us on iTunes or Spotify. We now have video versions of these episodes on our Seacoast YouTube channel for those who enjoy listening and watching. Thanks so much for listening.